What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
It's Wednesday night. You know what that means. I mean, you're locked and loaded to Wrestling Inc. as we talk all things AEW Dynamite plus the top stories in the pro wrestling world. Good evening, everybody. I am Justin Labar, coming to you from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And we're going to do this thing, have a lot of fun here, being joined, as I so commonly am here on Wrestling Inc. He is the man up in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, referee for more than 20 years in the WWE. He made counting to three as cool as it can be. I'm talking about the living legend, the one, the only, Jimmy Corderas. Jimmy, how are you?
After that intro, I am feeling fantastic. What can I tell you, man? I appreciate the kind words, and I'm feeling good. Looking forward to talking about tonight's episode, that's for sure. I can be a little nitpicky at times, and that may come out at times, but we'll see. We'll see where it goes.
We'll see where we go. Yeah, a lot to talk about from Dynamite. Also joining us tonight, always love it when he can join the lineup, coming to us from somewhere in Virginia. He's playing the beautiful musical notes during the day, and he's preaching the beautiful wrestling analysis here tonight with us. He is the one, the only, Matt Kuhn. Matt, welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's good to be back. Been here a lot, subbing recently, and much like Jimmy, I'm a little nitpicky, but unlike Jimmy, I have no idea what I'm talking about, so it should be a fun one.
Well, that's subjective, I guess, to everybody, where you land on that, but we'll nitpick, but we'll compliment, I'm sure, as well, as we go through Dynamite. Before we do AEW Dynamite, let's talk about a few news items. I wish they were something positive, but lately in pro wrestling, there's a little bit harder to come by, especially when we're talking about wrestling executives. First, let's start with TNA. Yes, the newly returned, rebranded TNA Wrestling. They have fired their president, Scott D'Amore. That was announced by Anthem Sports Entertainment, that of course owns TNA. And Jimmy, this, to a lot of people in the wrestling world, came out of nowhere.
No, it came out of nowhere not only the wrestling world, those who are fans of TNA and people who know a little bit of the backstory of the TNA brand. You know, I like Scott. Scott's a friend of mine. He's a good dude. He took a company basically that looked like they were on the edge of becoming maybe part of the WWE library, so to speak. And he elevated that company to where, you know, it's something to watch now. It is a company that wrestling fans, diehard wrestling fans who are getting it, are grasping. And I like his product. He's got a great wrestling mind, and he's got some good people surrounding him, helping him with the creative aspect and the booking. But at the same time, this looks more like a business decision. Nothing more. Like I said, Scott's a great wrestling mind. But from a business standpoint, they need to grow their product more. You see the WWE making these big deals now with Netflix and that going on, AEW with TBS. You can argue that TNA is at a level now that if they were had a bigger platform, that they may be competing with AEW for who's number two brand. They have that good a roster. So I think it's nothing more than a business move, them trying to get their product out there as best they can, whether it's going to be via streaming services, whatever it is. I just, again, like you said, came out of nowhere, kind of surprised me though.
Yeah, Matt, they obviously just had their event TNA Hard to Kill a couple weeks ago. Safe to say some of the best momentum they've had in a long time. So, you know, most everybody behind the rebranding, going back to TNA, that Hard to Kill event. I watched it. I thought it was a good success. So interesting timing that they would have that, and then 2-3 weeks later, whatever it's been now, make this decision. This almost feels like you would make this decision prior to the relaunch.
As opposed to making Scott D'Amore the face of the relaunch, you know, which is what he very much was. He was the guy in the ring. He was the guy rallying the troops, which is what makes us all the more surprising. Of course, as there are often, there's whispers of perhaps some other reasons why. Not going to get into that because I don't know anything about it. But at the same time, when you look at the fact that he was the face of the reboot and this just happened, if you're going to, you know, listen to some of those rumors, you can. But maybe it also has to do with the fact of, you know, maybe some people at TNA did not like the relationship with WWE, because I hear that Scott D'Amore was very much involved with the relationship with WWE, and maybe somebody felt that wasn't a good thing for them. Nobody really knows as of yet, but again, the people that I know that know Scott D'Amore like him a lot and think he's very good, and we're very surprised.
Yeah, same. From what I've been able to gather as well, is he was relatively liked by those who worked with him in TNA. You mentioned the cross promotion there with WWE, you know, and working the Rumble. I'd be curious what, I'm sure we're going to get more details as time goes on. You know, I've also heard speculation that he butted heads with Anthem Sports. At the end of the day, Anthem Sports is going to win out because it's they control the company. So we'll, something to keep an eye on. I'd have to suspect though, we have not seen the last of Scott D'Amore in the pro wrestling business. So we'll see where he pops up next. All right. Well, that's a story. You know, somebody lost their job, no good there. But like I said, I think Scott D'Amore will land on his feet, and he'll move on in TNA. Certainly, again, we'll continue on. This next story, not as positive on any level at all, but we will address it. It is on WrestlingInc.com. I am going to paraphrase some bits, both for brevity and for graphic nature. But if you want to get the full thing, again, you can go to WrestlingInc.com. So this is a story about the late Ashley Massaro, a former diva in WWE. She passed away in 2019 by suicide. But in 2016, she had those allegations that she was on one of the international tours that WWE would often does, where they send talent over and they go to different military bases, boost morale and such. And she had alleged that when she was on one of those tours of Kuwait, that she was drugged and sexually assaulted by members of the armed forces. In her allegations that happened, and her allegations that she, when she got back to the U.S., there was a quiet meeting with Vince McMahon, with John Laurinaitis, with Kevin Dunn, and with some other execs and or lawyers. And they basically said, you know, we're sorry, but let's keep this quiet. We don't want to damage the relationship of what we're doing with the United States military. Obviously, that was very... That continued the pain that she was already dealing with. Well, now in a new report from Vice, former WWE head of talent relations John Laurinaitis, who of course already is under fire in the most recent civil suit that in allegations towards he and Vince, John Laurinaitis' attorney has confirmed to Vice that they did know about this. That they kind of were going against the company line. The WWE had always denied, saying that we weren't aware of this. There was no cover up. There's no what have you. And John Laurinaitis' management is basically saying, yeah, we were aware of this. Again, I'm being very brief in the, you know, if you want to get all the details, but Jimmy, this just when we think we can't get another ugly story from the past, here's another one. And obviously, yeah. You know, Ashley Massaro no longer with us, so no longer able to. Defend her side of things, but this is ugly.
No, it is, and that's the hard part about it. You know, as someone who has been there and been, you know, around these people and worked for these people, you don't see this side of them. You know what I mean? I was one of those guys. I went there. I did my job as best I could every day in, day out. Was treated, I thought, fairly by the company when I was there. And then you hear this ugly side of it, and it makes you scratch your head, and you just want, you know, eventually the truth will come out. And when the truth does come out, those who need to pay the consequences have to pay the consequences. Let's put it that way. It's like you said, it's an ugly situation. It's tough to talk about, especially after all the allegations against Vince McMahon came out. I just, again, for someone who saw one side of it, hearing this side of it kind of upsets me. And I can't imagine what Ashley was going through and what her family was going through at the time, too. You got to feel for them as well.
Sure, sure. And Matt, I've not got to talk to you at all on the air or off the air about any of this that's all happened in terms of the allegations towards WWE and executives. But we have Laurinaitis, you know, this matter. And then his response, his first public legal response through his lawyers to the allegations from Janelle Grant were, and again, I'm paraphrasing here, but basically saying he's a victim, that he's a victim of that, kind of alluding to that, you know, Vince is his boss and Moore's going to come out. And Laurinaitis feels like this is a mafia movie where he's just flipping and just he's just letting everything out right now.
Yeah, I was going to say he's a. It's funny you said that. My first line was going to be he's going full Sammy the Bull here. He's going full Sammy the Bull. You know, he's got himself some horrible accusations, and now all this stuff is coming out where it is so apparent that this stuff happened. It is so likely that this stuff happened that his defense is to admit it all happened. And to put himself in a different light in regards to these things. And then coming out with Ashley Massaro information, it just seems like posturing. I don't know anybody involved in this, but just from the outside, it looks like he is trying to put himself in the best possible light. But at the same time, those of us out in the public who are watching can see that these accusations by Ms. Grant and the ones by Ms. Massaro have teeth. They're real. And that's the takeaway we should have, and how to prevent this from happening in the future, and how to hold everybody accountable who were part of this in the past.
Yeah, it certainly does not. This does not feel like this is the end or even close to the end. This feels like this is going to get uglier before anything gets cleaned up. And that's even if, and I'm kind of going back now to Janelle Grant, and that's even if things get settled out of court because they don't want to go to discovery, or this is still just going to get ugly before, again, things get cleaned up and yeah. Justice even potentially is served. So there you go. There's two very interesting, very newsworthy, but very unfortunate stories. Again, you can get the full down to the word detail of both stories on Wrestling Inc. plus a whole lot much more. Gentlemen, what do you say we actually talk about things in the wrestling ring now, huh?
Sure.
Let's get there. All right. AEW. Here we go. AEW Dynamite coming from Phoenix, Arizona tonight. And we kick it off with a match to determine who will be the next challenger to Samoa Joe in his AEW world title on March 3rd. We got Hangman Page versus Swerve Strickland. Swerve has beat Hangman every time they've encountered each other. So Swerve needs to do it one more time here in order to get to Samoa Joe. That's the story going into this. Crowd very much behind Swerve. Commentary even noted it's a 90-10 Swerve crowd, and they even, you know, they sold their surprise to an extent. Taz is kind of justifying it of how the crowds today in 2024 are different in terms of who they like and what they expect. We got a pretty good looking table spot, albeit no DQ called there, Jimmy, but mm-hmm. The match goes on. But this is at a 30-minute time limit match, and Swerve looks like he's going to have the finishing touches right here. One, two, and then ding, ding, ding. Time has expired. So just short by 1 second. So it's a draw. Swerve wants 5 more minutes. Hangman's not going to do that. But then Tony Khan, through Tony Schiavone, announces that this will be now a triple threat. Samoa Joe versus Swerve Strickland versus Hangman Page. Jimmy, do you like the booking of taking this down to the final second, and do you like the result of both men get to go to the world title match?
To believe it or not, I do. I mean, like you said, there were little things in the match, like the table spot, which, you know, hey, you know, technically speaking, could be a DQ, but hey, it is AEW, and they let a lot of things slide from the rules standpoint. But hey, these two guys put on a heck of a match. They told a nice little story. They started off slow. They let it build. They let it build. They let it build up to that finish, which I didn't see coming. And I like the fact that they didn't do the countdown. You know, we said 5, 4, 3, 2. And even the people looked a little confused by it. And the five, you know, Swerve asking for the 5 extra minutes and Hangman just embracing that heel side throughout the entire match because he felt the crowd, you know, totally against him. I'm cool with it. I'm cool with it being a three-way. The one thing that I had a big problem with is, excuse me, wait, ladies and gentlemen, Tony Schiavone, who I like. It has nothing to do with Tony himself. I just heard from Tony Khan that the match at the pay-per-view will now be a three. Why don't we have an authority figure that actually comes out, like an Adam Pearce, like a Nick Aldis, a general manager, someone, so to speak, to come out and make this announcement in front of the live crowd instead of having Tony. It kind of took away from the moment, if for me anyways. I don't know how the live crowd was with everything, it seemed like, during that thing. But for me, it took away from that moment. It's almost like maybe a Scott D'Amore would fit in there nicely and help them do some booking in AEW as well, because he has that mind, and show him as the authority figure. Maybe that's a place he could end up.
Very well could. Yeah, I mean, Tony Khan has certainly shown us, as we'll see again later, he needs a prompter. Matt, I saw you on Twitter tonight talking about this, the crowd reactions and who is what. What do you make of Swerve, who seemingly feels like he is the most, or one of the most over baby faces in the company, and Hangman Page, who was supposed to be one of the darlings coming into this company when it started, is got the crowd all against him?
It's one of these things where people want to say, you know, the fans have taken control of things and are, you know, aren't going along with the program. But when you watch the program, you see there, what other way are fans supposed to react? Like, Swerve, super cool, super great song. Beat the hell out of Hangman for 4 months and invaded his house, cut a promo on his baby. I love saying that. The dance, everything. Hangman, once again, the most confusing, inconsistent character ever, with this X factor, this it factor, and a sequence of moves that, in the right context, he could just be this explosively very popular guy. But it already been done. Swerve is liked, Hangman's disliked, and for reasons that are on the screen. So people talk about this double turn happening. For me, like, if you're really going to do a double turn, which would be not just saying, hey, Swerve's okay and Hangman's kind of bad now. No, it's already that way. The fans don't like Hangman. They love Swerve. Then you really have to hammer it home. There should have been a bigger moment for Hangman to maybe even hit, attack Swerve after the bell. All kinds of stuff could happen. Swerve showing that he had some kind of code. Many things could have happened to make it a more overt, instead of this just death by a thousand paper cuts, nuanced booking. I hate it going to a three-way. I was so hopeful last week when they said it was one-on-one, because I think a focused one-on-one feud is so much better than a three-way feud with these kind of, you know, malleable, inconsistent roles.
So do we think, now that we know that it's a triple threat, Jimmy, are these two going to cancel each other out? Is this how Samoa Joe retains? Or do we think Tony Khan and the booking committee pull the trigger on this popularity that Swerve has?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that this is a way to get out of the situation where, yes, you want to see Swerve go against Joe, and if you want Joe to retain the championship, this is a way to get past that. A lot of people may not like it, but that's the wrestling business. You're trying to not there's a way to do it one-on-one where Swerve gets screwed out of the title, but that's not Joe. Do you know what I mean? That's something you see from Samoa Joe. So this I think is a way to get past that, make Hangman the fall guy in this thing, so to speak, so that they can get to the next, whatever the story is going to be after that. But eventually it does have to be Swerve as the guy, because that's what the fans want right now.
Matt,
we want Swerve.
We want Swerve. Matt, if you're making early bets while the odds are what they are, who do you have walking out of the next AEW pay-per-view as the world champion?
I'd say at this point in time, Joe, because it's funny. Wrestling is such a sport of of just momentum, right? Because this really was supposed to be Adam Cole. Like, Adam Cole was supposed to be in this position. He got hurt. MJF got hurt. So we got to put it on Joe. And then Swerve got hot. And it was like, well, it's going to Swerve. Like, it's going to Swerve and Revolution. But then Joe has really shown himself to be maybe the guy AEW's needed this whole time as a champion. So I think Tony Khan is reading those tea leaves, knowing the hotness of Swerve ain't going anywhere, and keeping the title on Joe for the time being. I don't know if I agree or disagree, but in a three-way, I think I like that better than in a one-on-one.
All good explanations. We'll see how things continue to shake out as we go through the rest of the month of February. So we go from the men's world title picture over to the women's, and I love my first, probably the number one act I enjoy watching on AEW TV each week is Timeless Toni Storm. She has a match against Red Velvet. Deonna Purrazzo is on commentary. Toni gets the win via ankle lock, and then after the match, Purrazzo gets to the ring, and the ladies have a little stare down. Timeless Toni gives a little kind of like sniff, and if you want to call it, to Purrazzo. Matt, what's your thoughts on this? I don't know. Timeless Toni Storm is just such an entertaining act. I was a little surprised in the last few weeks to see that, like, we're with Purrazzo being the new signee, that they're already kind of letting her. She's acting as the heel, kind of, and they're just letting Toni Storm is just getting over with her popularity. So once again, I have this several times in AEW, like, this bit of confusion or question of who's the face or who's the heel and is it right or wrong. But no matter, I'm just in love with Timeless Toni Storm. What say you with this women's program?
Timeless Toni Storm has been great. Tony Khan always has shiny new thing fixation where he likes his new things. I don't think it's a bad thing. You know, you get new people on. Plus, Deonna has stepped up to the plate and been fantastic. And the best part about this, and I think we should lean into this more, is Deonna going, who is this person? What the heck's going on? Why are you acting like this? I would love it to be more like, what in the hell is going on? Why is everything black and white? Why are you talking like this? Why are you guys feeding into this? I would love Deonna to kind of even break through and get stronger with the kind of fourth wall, what the hell is going on here? Deonna stepped up to every opportunity and has surpassed almost everybody's expectations except mine, because I knew she'd be awesome.
Yeah, Jimmy, we have this story going on. It's clear that looks like AEW is going to be rolling out another big female talent name here in the coming weeks, which we'll talk about. This does kind of feel like AEW is maybe hitting some of their best stride right now with what they're presenting in terms of the women's division. What do you think of this Timeless Toni Storm feud with her longtime friend, Deonna Purrazzo?
I like it because there's a backstory to it, and they're trying to present that. And Deonna Purrazzo is actually giving most of the backstory, which is good because it's coming from the source. You know what I mean? As opposed to, yes, the announcers are helping tell the story, and that's their job. They have to help tell the story, but it is coming from Deonna Purrazzo. Question for you guys, because sometimes I forget things, too many ref bumps over the years. But when they talked about the tattoos, where is Deonna Purrazzo's tattoo?
Both of them is on their ankles.
And what did she use for a finish tonight?
Ankle lock. Toni Storm.
Maybe Toni Storm can say something to the effect when she interacts with Deonna Purrazzo is, you talk about that tattoo, the matching tattoos. You don't deserve to wear that tattoo anymore. So I am going to put that ankle lock on it, and I'm going to rip that tattoo off you, or something along those lines, or, erase it from your memory or from your ankle or whatever the case may be. But I like the fact that there's a backstory to this.
Yeah, I like it. Maybe if I missed it, I apologize, especially as I'm claiming my Toni Storm fandom. This is the first time I can recall her using the ankle lock, so I'd have to say that's a great call on you, Jimmy. I'm surprised if it was done on purpose, which I assume it was, that color was not given. But we'll see if she continues to do so. So that fun interaction, mm-hmm. post-match there between those two ladies. All right, we got a Blackpool Combat Club, all three of them in Moxley, Brian Danielson and Claudio. They're gonna go up against the trio from CMLL. And I gotta say, and I saw this, it was my first time, admittedly, and I know he's a veteran, and I know some people that watch A lot of luchadors are going to say, oh, you've been living under a rock. But this Heichiro, he fought a one-on-one match against Brian Danielson on Collision last Saturday. And we voted on Busted Open on Sunday that this was our match of the week. It was just a tremendous match. I really encourage you to go check it out. He's part of this CMLL trio here tonight in this match against the Blackpool Combat Club. Some high-flying luchador spots, as you would expect. Of course, commentary selling that if it's going to be that favors the luchadors. And, of course, Blackpool Combat Club, they want to fight and make this more of a mat game or a slugfest. But finally, the ref's going to get slightly bumped, and Claudio is going to low blow Heichiro, and he's going to end up getting the win. So we get this, Jimmy, and then post-match, there's some more luchadors that are sitting front row. They jump in, not happy with what the Blackpool Combat Club did. But then we get more AEW wrestlers come down. This is unusual, to me at least, because this pitted AEW as the heels when normally it's the outside invading group that you paint as the heels. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this. What do you make of this?
Yeah. And even Taz tried to say that on commentary. He says, look, the crowd is cheering for these CMLL guys, but I view them as outsiders trying to come in. And that's how it should be presented. But, you know, that Lucha style, you could still be heels and still do that Lucha style. I love the idea of the clash of the styles. You have
sorry to cut you off. Heichiro, no. he did great heel work against Brian Danielson on Saturday in the one-on-one match.
Exactly. So it can be done, but you know, this crowd was loving everything in this match. They were cheering all the moves. They weren't cheering for, it didn't feel like they were cheering for a team. They were cheering for a moves as opposed to anything else. And anything that anybody did. And getting to that finish with the referee, you know, I nitpick and coming, you know, from the world of the striped shirt, the little things that matter, you know, and getting to work with some great guys like Eddie Guerrero during the lie, cheat, and steal era and Eddie and Chavo and all that sort of stuff. When he was in the corner and it didn't look like he got bumped. He did a little bit, but it was almost looked like he was covering up not to see it, yeah. If you get my drift. But he stayed there too long, and the low blow took too long to happen. If he'd have just shot him into the corner, and when the referee turned and you know to avoid getting hit with the contact, that's when it should have happened right away, and then the referee could look up and going like, "What the heck did I miss? Did I miss something? You can't call what you don't see."
Yeah,
it's just yeah again little things.
Yeah, Matt, we know that Tony loves, Tony Khan loves doing these interpromotional angles. He loves to be able to use talent from all around the world, which, you know, on paper is a cool concept to have, to truly have an open kind of door to where, you know, you can see literally anybody and everybody in the wrestling world except for WWE and then now probably TNA talent. But what do you make of how this is being executed? Are you with it? Does this have your interest or... do we just need to move on and stick to AEW, no, guys?
Not at all. Not any bit of my interest at all. Hey, Justin, remember like when you were a kid and you like played kickball and then one day you're like, hey, what if we had no outs? What if there's unlimited strikes? You know, like, and then you start playing the game with no rules and it kind of loses its form, it loses its function, and most importantly, it loses its fun. And so I think in the Lucha style, you definitely can have it if it's synchronized in the right way, where it's a very entertaining match. But this one never clicked to me. I died a slow death the entire match. It was just long without purpose. And the continued and increasingly diminishing of the star power of the guys in the Blackpool Combat Club because they're being grouped together. And they're also now in a feud with guys who are, you know, they're great luchadors, but they're not really people for people who are a little smaller. You need to do some presentation, some background beyond a Collision match to see them as a threat, you know, to freaking John Moxley and Daniel Bryan. Like these are big, big names. You know, these are huge guys. You stick them in the Blackpool Combat Club. It's the sum is less than the whole of its parts. And then now you have this very confusing match. Like Jimmy was saying, the ref missed the crotch shot, but like there were people just camped out in that ring. Like there was no form, no structure at all. I understand Lucha rules, but it wasn't even that. And I was waiting for the match to end, and that usually doesn't happen.
Yeah, I'm definitely on the belief of the Blackpool Combat Club has passed its expiration date. Not the three individuals, they're all three are great talents, but everything down to the name. William Regal's been gone for over a year. Let's move on. Let's give Moxie a break. I know he can't take the.
I'm just saying, me and Regal. I'm sorry, he doesn't like being called Regal. He likes being called Mr. Regal. Me and Mr. Regal had a podcast. When he left the podcast was over. When he left the BCC, maybe the BCC should be over. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I agree. And part of me wants to give Moxie a damn vacation, but then, you know, with Adam Cole getting injured and MJF's injured, it's like he just can't. Moxie just can't find it open to where they can let him go home. I don't know. So I guess we'll see where this goes. I guess it's going to build to just one grand Braveheart like showdown where everybody just converges in the middle of the ring. I guess by the pay per view of, you know, it'll be 10 AEW guys versus 10 CML guys.
How are we? Are we on the air?
Yeah.
Jimmy's frozen. Justin's gone. Jimmy's frozen. Uh-oh. If you can,
I can hear you.
We can hear you, Matt. Man, I see Matt's frozen.
No, Matt's frozen. Yeah.
All right, we'll let Matt.
This is quite a situation here.
All right,
just bouncing in and out. Yeah. Justin's just.
Remove Matt for a second while he
jumps back in.
Give him a second. I'll let him reboot. Yeah, I don't know. I'm entertained by some of the luchadors. Like I said,
right.
Hate you, Sarah, most notably, but I'm kind of against the overall goal. If I even know the overall goal, but nonetheless,
it does not to keep harping on this, but it does feel like an us versus them scenario. But again, the fans are cheering both entities, so mm-hmm.
All right, and we do see backstage Undisputed Kingdom has attacked Chuck Taylor. I don't believe we got any more follow-up on the night of that, so that was a quick little bit there, so not really going to spend any time on that. We do get finally to Tony Khan's announcement. Hopefully Matt will jump back in before we move off this topic, because I'm sure we all have our opinions to weigh in on this. So Tony Khan had another big announcement, so we all were waiting with bated breath, and he announces that you might have seen earlier in the day, and I did see this earlier today, that the TD Garden in Boston has announced that AEW Dynamite will be coming on Wednesday, March 13th. And Tony Khan is announcing that that episode of Dynamite will be dubbed Big Business. And if you look at the font, it had a very money-inspired kind of font and characteristics. And in the background of some of the graphics, it said Boston, but it was spelled Boss with two S's, S's being dollar signs. Jimmy, much like when they were going to Chicago some years back, and they never officially announced it, but it kind of became the worst kept secret of look who's going to show up in Chicago, and it was CM Punk. And this particular situation, it kind of feels like worst kept secret, it's going to be Sasha Banks, of course now known as Mercedes Moné. Not quite as strong of a connection of Boston to the fans, and CM Punk is literally Chicago made Punk, but Boston is where she's from, and that appears to be what we are building to. Your thoughts on the announcement and your thoughts on the likelihood that they've signed and have Mercedes Moné on the roster?
Well, I didn't see it as a huge announcement because, A, like you said, there were ads out there and stuff I saw on Twitter that said they were coming to the TD Bank Garden, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that news was already out there. It was on, you saw it everywhere, pretty much on. I think even Wrestling Inc. had something mentioning it. So that news was already out there. It was just basically like a little show to say, hey, we're having this show, Big Business, at TD Bank Garden. And like you said, the font for the S's look like little dollar signs, Mercedes Moné. So it's like the worst kept secret in the world. So why not, if you have signed her, and you think she's going to be a game changer, announce it. Yes, I know we're 5 weeks away and whatever the case may be, but you basically gave it away. So if you're going to give it away, give it away.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah, I always, it's to the, it's the I always remember something Kevin Nash told me, which was it's a lot harder to make money off of things that you don't advertise. You know, this situation, again, it's kind of torn. It's like you're expecting people that are really plugged in to know, and they've seen the rumors that she signed, and they're picking up on the little Easter eggs we just discussed. But, you know, this is where again, I would go to your AEW. You're trying to have year-over-year growth. You're trying to grab new fans. And if you're getting, if you have acquired one of the most well-known famous female wrestlers that was previously in WWE, that's been on top of the mountain there, that's an acquisition that you would think you could try to draw in some new viewers of people that really haven't given your product a chance early, or haven't done it at least recently. Maybe they did it one time, checked out, whatever. This is a chance to try to get them back in. But they're not going to be clued into these Easter eggs and things like that if they're not watching your program already. So, you know, I tend to agree, like, just make that part of the announcement of wait until you see the debut appearance of our newest acquisition. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. It is still 5 weeks away, so it is possible that maybe they get a little more blunt with their promotion of her.
Yeah. Calling the event not just big business, saying that this is going to be I don't think he used the term game changer, but he said this is going to be an unforgettable episode. And
he said it was going to be the memorable night in the wrestling business. So
unless you hear, can you smell when playing when I don't know. Anyway,
Matt, give me a thumbs up if you're ready to come back in. All right, Matt.
All right.
Hey guys, I'm on my phone right now. Like my computer is, there's no Wi-Fi in the surrounding area. So not even another network. Sorry about that.
No, you still look and sound good. You're good.
Oh, thanks. Well, but we're talking about the big announcement.
Big yes. business. And we're talking about the Easter eggs. The Boston business. Was spelled Boss, B-O-S-S, 10. Yeah. The S's have dollar signs. So obviously, just much like when Punk showed up in Chicago, the worst kept secret for AEW.
There's no secret that this is what's going on. I think when we follow, I know, you know, a lot of people lump certain reporters in the same light. I tend to trust Sean Ross Sapp. Sean Ross Sapp made that call, and that this was imminent not that long ago. So I felt so confident about it. I actually bet someone online that Mercedes wouldn't be at the Royal Rumble one. And I think this is great for AEW. I don't know how good a job they'll do at debuting her and what they're going to do with her and what kind of platform she has to raise the other talent up, but I'm curious to see. Good for AEW. It's huge news for them. It's a big get.
It is a big get. And Matt, I was just saying a second ago before you, I think, I don't know if you would have heard this part. I'd be curious what you think. I was saying to Jimmy that, you know, on the one hand, like, I get it. Like, you know, it is the worst kept secret. So everybody that's clued in that reads the internet, that watches AEW regularly, they're all expecting her. Right. But I also said, to Jimmy, you know, she's somebody who was one of the most recognizable female names in WWE. And so if you have acquired her, this is a great opportunity. She, more than most other acquisitions that AEW has, is a chance to try to bring a new fan in, a fan who hasn't really sampled AEW or hasn't done it at least recently. And for that reason, I would want to be splashing her all over every billboard and every promotion possible to drum up that interest rather than waiting for it to be the big ha moment the night of the show. I don't know where you stand on surprises and how you promote them, but that's kind of my take to this one.
My take is you try to make as much money as you can, and usually it's with an announcement, right? However, this worked before, and everybody were talking with CM Punk. Everybody talked about, wow, what a genius move that was with CM Punk to not say his name, debut him in a huge stadium in Chicago, fill the place up. And I think in this case, it's fine because the clues are so much more overt, you know, like we know she's coming. If she doesn't come, there's going to be a huge issue. And so I think in this case, I can understand Tony Khan doing it because it worked so well for the CM Punk debut. That could not have gone any better.
Yeah.
Now, and if I could just counterpoint that just for a second, though, yes, it did work like a charm for the CM Punk thing, but the CM Punk situation is completely different from what we were getting here. Yes, Mercedes Moné is a very recognizable talent, former WWE superstar and well known, but Punk has this different aura about him. And it was like Justin said, in his hometown of Chicago, you know, and yes, Mercedes Moné is from Boston. You said, Justin, if I'm not
Massachusetts, yeah.
Well, from Massachusetts, but I hate to say this apples to oranges thing because it's not that different, but at the same time, like I said, Punk had a different aura about him. People wanted this so bad.
Well, and I'll say this too about, you know, there's obviously been another conversation with AEW lately. It's been the trend of their attendance. You know, if you follow like things like WrestleTix and accounts like that, the some of these buildings that are set up for 10,000 and they're doing 3,000 or less. TD Garden's a big barn up there. Been there many a times for wrestling, for hockey, for all the likes. Big barn up there. You better get a good fill in there. If you're announcing this special of a show and all the more reason why I would just make it known that she's going to be there. I would flash it on every billboard in Boston that she's, that's me though, because, you know, don't set this place up for 12,000 and, you know, again, draw four. No, we'll see. And a nickel's worth of free advice to both of you. If you haven't already learned this, if you ever have anything critical, or not even critical, but just anything that's not overly positive about anything you watch of Sasha Banks, now known as Mercedes Moné, don't type it on Twitter.
Oh,
somewhere in the world, there's a room full of Sasha Banks bots. If she wore blue, but you say no, she wore teal. It is the end of your internet for the next few days. Just a bit of freaking fight.
I got a taste of it the last few days just for something the other company did. But anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I, for one, welcome our Sasha Banks bot overlords.
Be careful what you wish for.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
I like that you bet somebody, too. She wasn't going to be in the wrong. That's great. Good on you for the side hustle there, Matt.
You know. Hey, but you know, the story goes, as soon as I won, he blocked me and ghosted me. So then,
the guy you made the bet with just bailed?
He just bailed. But here's the great part though, is that I was going to use the money for my music school. So I said, and everybody was just killing this guy on Twitter. Like, he couldn't comment on anything without 1,000 people going, pay Matt Coon, pay Matt Coon. So I said, hey, leave this guy alone. I don't want to be part of a harassment thing, but here's a wish list for my music school. And I bet the guy $500, and I put the wish list was about $600 worth, and people on Twitter bought it all up. So I got the same amount of stuff or more for my music school for this guy ghosting me than I did by winning the bet.
Tremendous. Well, that's good to hear that the people in the world came through. That's a good positive story. I don't want to be part of harassing said individual and causing him any mental whatever, but what a move. Dude. Bet you and then just bailed.
The next day, like that night, he's like, good job, man. We'll catch up tomorrow. I'm like, cool. And the next day, as soon as I clicked on his name, it's like, you can no longer send messages. I laughed. I was like, oh, okay. Of course.
I take it this is not somebody you know in person or that you can see regularly.
No, but it was somebody who had their face and name that I dealt with a lot on Twitter that I thought, you know, hey, well, whatever. You know, because I totally would have paid like the minute she showed up. But, you know, and I didn't have any inside info, but from what Sean Ross Sapp was saying, I just knew she's not going to be at the Rumble, you know. But yeah. I was just tired of people saying, I'm like, $500. He's like, I got it. I'm like, all right. You know, I don't mind making money for my music school. I don't mind at all.
There you go.
Well, I'm glad it worked out that you got $600 worth of stuff for your school. That's get perfect time real quick before we segue into the back half of the show. Give a plug for your music school, because I know I do see little things. I've seen you post some clips of kids playing. They sound awesome. Give a plug.
Well, it's Mako Music School. Mako is in Matt Coon Music School in Mechanicsville, Virginia. And you can hit up the wish list over on my Twitter at Matt Coon Music. But most importantly, everybody should know that anybody can play music. Any kid should have the opportunity, and kids can do so much more than you think. So when you see the stuff that my kids do, which is amazing, we're great. Don't get me wrong, but any kid could do that with the right teaching and the right encouragement. So encourage your kids to follow their passions. Not every kid should play sports. Some kids play music. Get the most out of them, and you will be shocked at the things that they can do.
Very cool. Very awesome. Cool.
I was fortunate enough, Matt, to do both, play sports and play music. I played sax in school, so, yeah.
Nice. That's the best of both worlds, you know? Music should be everything somebody does, just like sports should be everything somebody does. The best part is when you're a kid, let the kids find the things that they're passionate about, you know?
Yeah, and speaking, again, not to harp too much on this, but, again, you said music is so important. Even in the wrestling industry, music is so important because you hear those first notes of someone who is over huge and you hear that crowd reaction. It's everywhere. Music is everywhere.
I can picture a young Jimmy Corderas with the mullet hair, just being a Greek god, playing that sax, seducing the ladies with its sweet symphony sounds. I can see it. I can hear it.
Yeah. At least someone can.
that's.
But the fun part was, again, just a little side track here, was I started with the alto sax in school. Then it was the tenor sax. Then I played the baritone sax because I was the only one at the time who could carry it home to practice.
That's a big horn.
Yeah.
That's funny. Music's everywhere. Music huge. I'll say this last thing on the music bit before we move on. And I had this conversation, I had it the day after Rumble with Denise Salcedo on Busted Open. Was my one of my complaints I had about Rumble. And I love the minimalist entrance. I like that. I love emphasizing the big crowd in the stadium, but part because of not having a lot of video walls to see names, but also even bigger sound. That buzzer hit too many times at Royal Rumble, the 3-2-1 earn, and it took me longer than I care to admit. And I'm a guy that talks about pro wrestling on the microphone several times a week. It took me longer than I care to admit to have to figure out which talent was coming out next, because the music was not, there was not a production sting at the beginning that made me go, oh, that's so, yeah, there was just too much generic.
The product, you know, I'm in a position now because I've done theme songs for people that if I'm critical publicly, I hear about it from people. But I'll say that the music should represent the wrestler, and you should know the wrestler when they hit that music. You know, Deonna Purrazzo's music is great for her. I did her theme in Impact as well. And, you know, as soon as you hear certain notes, you should know it's a certain wrestler. The CFOs were amazing at that. Of course, Jim Johnston is amazing at that. You know, Mikey Ruckus does a great job, but he's got a lot of themes to do too. But in more often than not, he hits it out of the park. But the fella, the Deaf Rebel fella over at WWE, some differentiation, different styles of music, something that represents that person. The way, the perfect example is Mr. Perfect's music. It should represent you the way that that music represented him.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, even the smallest of touches, like, you know, when Flair came back to WWE after WCW was purchased, of course they stuck with his famous Space Odyssey song, but even just the littlest thing of just adding the woo at the very beginning, just before that, just the littlest things. Yeah, Jim Johnston, can we, I know we want to get the referees in the Hall of Fame, and we're going to line Jimmy up for that. Can Connor, Paul, can we please get Jim Johnston in the damn WWE Hall of Fame, please?
And no kidding. And on a side note, since Matt mentioned Mr. Perfect, I give myself a little pat on the back, because little known fact is I named the finish the Perfectplex.
Oh, wow.
I came up with a name for that by just off the cuff. Real quick story was he was having a match at Maple Leaf Gardens. I was standing right beside Jack Lanza when he came back, and Jack said, "Vince loves that finish. You got to come up with a name for it." And it just popped in my head, and I just said, "Jack, how does Perfectplex sound?" And he says, "We got the name for your finish." And he presented it to Vince, I guess, at the next TV, and bam, there it was.
Well, that's a hell of a lot better than a fisherman suplex. That's Jim. Wow. Somebody go out there on the late Kurt Hennig's Wikipedia. Mark it down. The Jimmy Corderas name that finish. I love these fun facts, Jimmy.
That's huge.
Very cool. All right. Talking about music and somebody synonymous in wrestling with music, Chris Jericho going up against Takeshita, of course, with Don Callis in his corner. Powerhouse Hobbs is also out there, but he's going to end up getting neutralized by Sammy Guevara later with a chair at one point. But the big thing here is Don Callis is going to hit Jericho with a screwdriver, and that is going to then segue moments later into Takeshita getting Jericho inside of inside of his own, you know, steep Boston Crab, Balls of Jericho's Lion Tamer, whatever you want to refer to it as, and getting Jericho to tap. So Matt, we've seen Jericho lose before in upset fashion, if you will. We saw him lost to Action Andretti a year ago. I think he lost to Hobbs somewhere along the way. This though, maybe the biggest, because I mean he's tapping out in his own finish. Now, what they do with it moving forward, we'll have to see. But what a win for Takeshita against Chris Jericho.
I'm wondering if when Jericho told Callis to bring him a screwdriver, if that's what he meant.
He wanted his Grey Goose and OJ, but that's what he got.
He hands him the screwdriver. And Jericho's like, "What is that? That is not what I asked for. When are we going to learn that Jericho's not the guy for this stuff? Like, Jericho's not the guy to get the younger guys over, you know, to grow them. It just doesn't work. It's not anything Jericho's doing wrong. It's just his character, where he is. You know, the only way to make this work is if Takeshita treated him as badly as Jericho treats the cover songs he sings. Like, that's the only way this would work for me, is if it was like really quick, over, punishing, done. That was a Chris Jericho music joke, by the way. And I would have liked to see Takeshita roll through him, not another prolonged match with this victory.
Yeah, Jimmy, I mean, Matt makes some points here. I mean, that Jericho's tried to give the rub before by doing the job, but I don't know if it's Jericho. I don't know if it's, you know, the booking or what have you, but I'll be really curious to see Takeshita's booking and treatment over the next few weeks here.
Yeah, it's where do you go next after this? And that's the big question. And I get what Chris is trying to do is get these younger guys over. I know there's a lot of people out there saying that, well, Jericho's the guy who refuses to put the young guys over. BS.
You know? He's making more money than any other wrestling contract he's ever had. I don't think he minds losing.
Exactamundo. And, you know, I just thought the match, there were a lot of bumps. Too much were I thought Chris landed too close to,
blue thunder type bomb from the top rope.
I think Chris Jericho got really beat up in that match. There was more than one occasion I saw Jericho's head hit hard.
Yeah. And the other thing I didn't like was, okay, here comes Sammy. He hits Hobbs in the back with the chair and he turns and no sells it. I mean, come on.
Then he hits him square in the face.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. You have to, because the hit in the back didn't work. At least sell a little bit where he has to hit you a couple of times in the back, you know, to get you to sell even more. But the no sell of the chair shot, so everybody else now looks weaker because a chair shot to the back makes you crumble. You know what I mean? I just didn't like that. And on the finish, I get the concept of him tapping out to his own finish. But at the same time, they hit him with the screwdriver and put the rear choke on him or whatever the move was. The referee raised his hand twice and he held it up that third time. Let it drop that third time. Mm-hmm. Let him choke out Chris Jericho.
Yeah, the fact that he kind of rallied there for a minute almost kind of null and voids the screwdriver aspect of the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Jimmy, this is a something from the chat room. This is easy segue for a cheap plug. I would grab the prop, but it's too far away and I'm not allowed to leave. This is Jake Stone. They let people enjoying the story you were telling the Perplexants. He says, Jimmy, you got to make your own book, legend. Well, Jake.
Yeah, that's a great idea. You know what? Maybe I should come up with one.
Jake, it's a fantastic read. I've read it. It's a great read. It's got a lot of great stories. Forward by the one and only Adam Copeland, Edge. Really great book.
Yeah,
so.
he was tremendous. Yeah, I love Adam for that. And for just for being the guy he was. So many other moments that I could, read the book.
That's like, don't give it all away.
Yeah.
I love the stories with you and Andre towards the beginning. Some of my favorite. All right, it's main event time. Tornado tag match with your AEW tag team champions, Ricky Starks and Big Bill, defending against the undefeated tag team of Darby Allin and Sting. Sting's got his sons front row watching along. And this one all over the place as the tornado is going to be. Sting does a crazy dive off the second balcony of the bleachers. I don't know how Darby Allin's there's a spot where Darby suicide dives through the ropes. Big Bill's on the outside. Bill catches Darby and then keeping the momentum, does a giant, they call it a boss man slam, which would be, you know, boss man slam, and just, you know, Darby back bumps on the outside. And I mean, it just, I could feel the air leaving Darby's body as he laid there and he was there.
The sound when that happened, like I'm 90% sure I made a sound on my couch when that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's again, if you didn't see Dynamite, if you're looking for us to give you the highlights, go see the spot. It's brutal, but worth seeing. Finally, though, we're going to get the Scorpion Death Drop from Sting on Ricky Starks. 1, 2, 3. We have new, as Howard Finkel would say, AEW Tag Team Champions and Darby Allin and Sting. Sting's sons come in the ring. Confetti a flying. Titles being raised. Commentary is given the stats. This is Sting's 25th championship in his illustrious career. Of course, we're now, you know, inside of a month until he's set to retiring right off the sunset, so it's all glorious. And then the EVPs of the Young Bucks attack with baseball bats and bloody up Darby Allin. I did not see how they bloody Darby. I don't know if it was a bat shot. I don't know if Darby blade. I don't know, but in a matter of seconds, Darby was gushing blood, dripping it all over their pristine white suits. They beat down Sting. Tons of heat from the crowd, so this got a reaction. Right. And of course, this leading into the match in Greensboro next month. Jimmy, what'd you make of the match? What'd you make of the heat afterwards?
I guess this was a match designed to keep Sting safe in some regard. But then when he jumps off the top of that entranceway, and yes, I get it. You got Big Bill down there to catch you, who could do a good job doing that. But on the other side, Ricky, I don't know. It almost looked like, and I hate to make this a bad joke, someone like Sting looked like he hit his right hip when he landed on the road. You know, a guy his age and hip, you know, I don't want to get into that kind of thing. But I guess it served its purpose to get to the next stage, which is the match with Nicholas and Matthew. But at the same time, you missed a lot going on because you had them separate too much. You had Sting and Ricky over here. You had Big Bill and Darby over there. So they were doing stuff at the same time. And you were missing a lot of what two of the guys were doing, because a lot of the focus was on Sting beating the crap out of Ricky Starks for the most part outside the ring before they got it inside the barricade, so to speak, where you can kind of keep an eye on everything. But at the same time, even when they were in the ring, there's stuff going on at the same, like, Big Bill, sorry to cut you off. Like Big Bill hit that big clothesline on Sting on the outside. At the same time, they were doing a sequence on the inside of the ring. So
I almost think when they, because they like to do these tornadoes, and I know you and I have that joke of, well, isn't that every tag match in AEW?
Yeah.
But when they advertise it's going to be that, and they're going to be like, I almost just split screen. Yeah. Just split screen, because you're right, because it's too often you end up missing. Because there's not enough coordination, it doesn't sound like, prior to these matches to space these spots out. So you end up having some of these guys do some of these spots and they're burning through them and almost for no reason if the camera's not going to catch it.
There's Matt, also another option, though. Yeah. Like, you know, if you watched FTR versus Briscoe's, the dog collar match, mm-hmm. if you watch that match, man, they're split up the whole time and they honestly look like they're taking turns and they're not looking at each other. They're gauging it by the crowd. And so you literally have time to go to this person and then go to that person. And so it can be done, as opposed to what Jimmy's saying, which is just this free-for-all, which splits our attention, splits the crowd's attention, and leaves the production truck in a nightmare.
Yeah. Matt, what do you make of this? And commentary leaned into it heavily. And obviously the angle the past few weeks, the Bucks are, you know, they're, you arrive late. They're harassing people backstage. They're watching from a monitor, like kind of like in a control room kind of thing. And then commentary really selling it, you know, as they got blood on their suits and they're ruining the celebration of Sting and Darby. You know, these, I don't care if these guys are EVPs, and just really, what do you make of them leaning into the titles that these guys do legit have in the office? What do you make of that being used as heel fodder?
I think it's fine. I think it can work. I'm not sure it's exactly clicking right now, but I think it's the perception that many of us have of them behind the scenes turned up to 11. You know, I don't know if it's possible, but I would have liked to see Ric Flair be involved and get that heel turn on Rick on Sting. Like, you know, that would be great. And then could you imagine Ric Flair with the two guys? They already have suits. Ric Flair, imagine the Bucks showing up drinking that god-awful energy drink, like, you know, and saying, this is, everyone has to drink this drink now. Like, there's so much more opportunity, and not just with Flair, there's so much opportunity to do more. Ricky Starks and Big Bill kind of being used as kind of this conduit to get the belts over. I think we saw the first flashes of Ricky Starks becoming a good guy again when he hesitated doing the spear on Sting. Sting is amazing. You know, you talk about him doing those dives. Dude is not a little guy, by the way. So we're talking about a 60-year-old who's like 6'2", 240. Like, he's a big guy. I liked involving the Suns. I liked them getting beat down. But this is a Bucks we haven't seen before. It's not a Bucks that I think makes money yet, but maybe after the match at Revolution.
And again, I know we did this earlier with the world title. I'll ask you guys again. We're a month out, early bets, early odds. Sting and Darby have to do the job, right? I mean, the Bucks are winning these tag titles, Jimmy, correct?
You would think, but again, it's his retirement matches. It's his, you know, do they do something along the lines where, hey, they defeat Matthew and Nicholas, Sting goes out as a champion, retires as a champion, but then that leaves Darby without a partner, and Nicholas and Matthew, using their EVP power, strip him of the titles because he, you know, his partner is gone and you can't just replace him with anybody. So you are no longer tag team champion and somehow relieve him of the titles that way. The one little thing I'm going to nitpick, and sorry to get off your topic of your question there, Justin, is when they came in and did the attack, the Bucks, using white bats as well. What does Jericho bring to the ring?
A bat.
Couldn't they find something else? There's so many weapons that have been used in wrestling, but the bat is now tied to Jericho. Use something else. It's a little thing that was kind of like, maybe they could have had something, a white pipe, metal pipe or whatever the case may be. you know, instead of a white bat. It's a little thing that kind of made me go, oh, come on, you could have found something else.
Well, if we're gonna, while we're on that with little things, if we want to go little nitpick, I also thought, you know, okay, we had a big table spot earlier in the night during that match with Swerve. Now we're doing another table spot here in the tornado tag again. We have enough weapons, we have enough things to, you know, what do we need to do? Do we need to book in the show with table spots? But
yeah, the only thing is, in the tornado match, it's not a disqualification like it should have been in the first one, like you said.
Correct.
And I know people are, just so they clarify to those out there that are going to complain and go, but how come when they do it through the announce table all the time? Because the announce table is part of the set. Mm-hmm. It wasn't brought out from under the ring. You know, it's like throwing someone into the stairs is not a DQ. But if you pick up the stairs and hit them with the stairs, now it's a DQ.
And is that correct? In the tornado tag, was the tornado tag? Yeah. Somebody was in a submission and somebody grabbed the ropes. The rope break is not valid in a tornado tag. Is that correct?
Well, you can't submit someone while they're in the ropes. It just
but they don't have to break the hold because there's no DQ. So you can't force
them. But at the same time, it makes a submission null and void because they are in the ropes. It has to be a pin or submission in.
But there's no rope break because you can't enforce a five count.
Exactly.
I was moving about when that happened, and that's pause. And I made a note to ask you on the rule book there. I know you have the rule book always handy. Real quick, big shout out. I think Big Bill looks amazing. I mean, maybe this might be one of the best big men that AEW has presented. You know, we of course have talked about the missteps with Wardlow at times and Lance Archer, you know, or Brian Cage, you know, guys that just can't get any kind of real momentum. You know, they might get wins on the B or C level shows, whatever, but in terms of when it really counts and matters. But I think Big Bill, even though I know he just lost the title tonight, but I think he just looks amazing. So he's another one I'm watching now that they're not tag team champions, and Matt alluded to it earlier. It looked like Ricky Starks might be heading back to the babyface side of things. What do we do with Big Bill? Hopefully, again, as all the toys that Tony Khan has, hopefully he does not get chucked back into the toy bin.
I wouldn't mind a name change. Like, I don't like the name Big Bill, but I was in Philadelphia, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, when Big Bill, as Cass, fainted and was made the headlines as far as, you know, he was passed out. And, you know, I acted like I was security. I started shoving people's cameras away like I worked there, but I did it. And so, like, to see him going from that to this is amazing. Like, I don't know the real story behind, like, I don't know the details, but I'm sure it's amazing because dude looks great. He looks happy. He's kicking all kinds of butt. He's done everything in every moment to keep making his character and him as a commodity increase in the eyes of the viewer. Really happy for him. And just especially being there, like literally a foot away from him while he was passed out those years ago that made those headlines. It's incredible to say that everybody can redeem, everybody can come back, everybody should get a chance to do what Big Bill is doing now.
Yeah, hell of a comeback story for him. I still owe him a receipt from a chokeslam a couple years ago, but that being said, I still support the guy. All right, so that was your AEW Dynamite tonight from Phoenix, Arizona. So tag team title change, two number one contenders for the world title, big business, Dynamite coming in 5 weeks with the inevitable debut of Mercedes Moné, formerly known as Sasha Banks. So AEW got some headlines, got some things to work with. We'll see again how they continue to build on this as we move forward. Final thoughts and cheap plugs. Jimmy, go ahead, sir.
Again, another okay episode of Dynamite, minus the little things, of course. Screws still need to be tightened there. I wish they would, pay attention to the booking side of things as opposed to putting matches together just because these guys, we're going to get, you know what? I hate to paraphrase your fellow busted open compadre over there, Bully Ray, but I couldn't give the rats, you know what, about five-star matches. Just entertain me. You know what I mean? Tell me a story that I can get behind.
So what you're saying is somebody needs to take Don Callis's screwdriver and tighten some things.
There you go. Exactly. But other than that, you know, there's stuff I like. There's stuff that didn't sit well with me, like pretty much every episode. So no wrestling show is perfect. But as far as where you can find me here on Wednesday nights. And also on Monday nights after Raw, you can catch me on the Refing It Up podcast with my good brother in stripes, Brian Hebner, and RJ, who holds the glue together. This week we had Trevor Murdoch on. Awesome chat with him, you know, in the NWA, and some stories that are worth listening to from him, which was really cool. And next week we have Shark Boy, which should be interesting. So you know, we're having fun doing our thing, and of course I'm having fun doing my thing on the Ref and Rants every Monday through Friday. Just like I said, little critiques here that not to tear down, but to help tighten screws again. There we go. Don Callis, can I borrow that screwdriver if I can? And having a little fun with it, let's put it that way, and sipping some coffee.
Very good, very good. Matt, thanks for jumping in and joining us tonight. Give me your final thoughts on Dynamite and anything else you'd like to put over the going on.
Sure. Dynamite was fine. It was fine. Like, they made the Mercedes announcement. Nobody's really caring that much about AEW these days because WWE is grabbing all those headlines. But I think it was a good show, but I also think they're really solidifying what they're trying to do, building up their viewership a little tiny bit at a time, but they're kind of keeping the same vision now, which I think is good. I think consistency is good. As far as where to reach me, you can reach me at Matt Coon Music. You can hit the wish list and donate some money to my for-profit music school for these kids in lovely suburban Virginia, or you guys can check out Ugandan Championship Wrestling. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but it's these fellas in Africa that don't have a ring. They got four posts. They're working their butts off, and they have a GoFundMe. And if you've seen it, you should hit up that GoFundMe because it's amazing stuff. And check it out. I think it's Ugandan Championship Wrestling. And hit up their GoFundMe. Before we go, Justin, I want to ask you a question. Do you have a bold prediction about the press conference tomorrow?
I do think there's a lot of layers and levels to this fantasy book, and I do think that one of the things that'll come out of it is that'll be announced that Vegas is the site of next year's WrestleMania. I've tossed out the idea as we're all trying to solve the Rubik's Cube that is The Rock and Cody and Roman, and supposedly this is all one big work that they know what they're booking here. But why did Cody win the Rumble then? And one thing I tossed out was maybe Rock and Roman is announced, that we've seen them do this with The Rock before. Maybe it's announced as next year's Mania, and they announce it's in Vegas next year. But then I know that Cody just said that he's coming for Roman, but it's not at Mania. I don't know where they're at. I'm baffled by this. I hope that I hope when it's all said and done that they work me and it's like a big ta-da. They really, you know. I've seen other things. Cody goes to Madison Square Garden. Where his dad couldn't get that title, and that's in September, right after Roman passes Hulk's. I don't know, but I do think they're in Vegas. Obviously, strategic because of the all the media being there for Super Bowl. But I do think Vegas seems prime and ready to host a Mania. And I think it's where they'll be at next year for 41. So that's my low hanging fruit prediction.
Thanks.
And I actually, Matt, I have seen clips of the Ugandan, and I have to say, if you're one of the clips I saw. I forget what move it was, but they did a move, and I was like, that person sold better than some of the selling I've seen on Dynamite at times.
They're good. They're good. They got, you know, they can't even afford the land that they're using to do the wrestling on. They're doing it on grass. They have to rent that land to do the wrestling on that land. So that's what the GoFundMe's for. Hopefully, eventually, they get a ring, and we can watch this become a story, and maybe – gosh, 10 years from now, 5 years from now, maybe we see some talent come out of there. You never know. Mm-hmm. Cool. Give people an opportunity, you know?
Cool. And I hate to do this, Justin, because you did mention Madison Square Garden. And the one thing that I do like about that story ending at Madison Square Garden, one of my favorite movies of all time is The Godfather. And we have this is a comparison. I don't know if this makes sense or not, but the opening scene of The Godfather is in Vito Corleone's office, where he's conducting family business. The ending scene of The Godfather is Michael Corleone in that same office conducting family business. And in a nice long movie, told a great story, and hopefully maybe that's the direction they go. I don't know.
I just hope. I hope that they are smarter than all of us and they know what they are doing. Maybe it's been a lot of, I mean, obviously the death threats are ridiculous, but a lot of negative, you know, sass from a certain segment of the audience on The Rock. Matt, maybe The Rock needs to go over and buy the Ugandans the wrestling ring and really babyface himself up.
Yeah, that wouldn't hurt. You know, as far as my prediction goes, since nobody asked, I'll just say it. I think the plan has always been Roman Rock since before Royal Rumble, and that's what they're going to do tomorrow is Roman Rock. And I would even say at the end of WrestleMania, we're going to see Rock actually win that title. That's my prediction. Ooh. I'm not for it, but I believe that's what's going to happen.
All right. Well, since you opened this manhole, we're going to stick with it for a minute, Matt. So my counter to that, and I think you might be, I think you're probably right. Rock and Roman, you know, you're probably doing it this year. You know, The Rock's been talking. You know, we did obviously a little bit of media where he kept alluding to it, and Mania 40. My question to all, fine. I'm not going to deny The Rock versus Roman. It's a huge deal. Why have Cody win the Rumble then?
Okay.
Either have Punk win it. And I know that would have been a tragedy because Punk then gets hurt, but that would at least have made sense. Punk wins it, and why not have Punk win it? Or why not have The Rock just enter the Rumble and win the damn Rumble? I don't understand why Cody wins the Rumble. I know he gets put in the history books. He's now there with Austin, Shawn, and Hogan as the only people to win back to back. But why have him win it and then 6 days later step aside and let somebody else come in and dance with the prom queen? I just don't get that.
To make him maybe the ultimate martyr, so to speak, because he did say in the promo that he had counsel from several people.
Yeah.
And we don't know who the several people are. We only know the one that came out to the, yes, it was Birmingham, Alabama, but still got that amazing reaction because like we talked about earlier, the people heard if you smell and regardless of the fact that some people were expecting and hoping for it, it worked that night, at least for that night. But we haven't heard the reason why. So I'm hoping at the press conference, we hear the reason why and Rock puts Cody over to the moon.
Yeah. I hope so. But I have a theory, Justin, because like what you said, nothing makes sense. Like you can bend this one way, the Rumble doesn't make sense. You bend another way, the Rumble doesn't make sense. So this is a theory that's my own entirely and based on no knowledge, okay? So like The Rock, Ari Emanuel is his agent, pretty much runs WWE, makes these big picture decisions, right? But there is like someone who does more day-to-day stuff there. And that guy maybe didn't care as much about The Rock, you know, being presented the way he is as much as he maybe believed in his own vision. And The Rock and Ari aren't sitting there watching the Royal Rumble. They don't care about the Royal Rumble. They care about what they're doing. And Triple H and The Rock have had a very long-term rivalry. I don't think they're friends. I'm not sure they're friendly, you know? So I think maybe this was Triple H just saying, well, I had Cody doing the Rumble. I know you're doing Rock for Mania, but have fun with that because that's the plan. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that makes sense to me at all.
I would, I mean, you know, I'm not going to go long-term with you. I would dispute them not being friendly. I think,
right.
I think, I don't know. I think Triple H obviously sees the value of having The Rock around, and I don't think there would be as much animosity there as maybe there once would have been back when both were talent, both fighting for a spot. But nonetheless, it's going to be fascinating. Between that scenario of The Rock and Cody, I don't know if they're what kind of questions they're going to take, or if the questions are going to be if it's going to be screened. But obviously, with all the news going on,
I talked to you about, Justin, make it about family.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. That, you know,
quite honestly, I think the best solution, really the simplest solution, and it doesn't null and void the Rumble, whatever, is a triple threat. It's Roman versus Rock versus Cody. You have Cody, you know, Cody and the Rhodes family. And then obviously the Anoa'i family. Like, I mean, you have family convergence there. If Cody wins, he walks out and beats both Roman and Rock on the same night. If Cody doesn't get the title, it still can be somewhat protected. I mean, to me, the triple threat's the way to go. I know some people were bemoaning triple threat earlier when we were talking about the AEW world title, but to me, and it's not like my first pick, but where we are now, that would at least get us out of this where it makes sense, where it's like Cody wins a Rumble, he gets his damn match, but The Rock's The Rock. He shows up, he calls out Roman, and that's just what it is. So, and to me, that's a sexy marquee, quite honestly. But I don't know. So we'll see. between are there going to be questions directed at Triple H or anybody else again? As
it's
these,
it's going to be the most well watched WWE press conference of all time, times 10. So it is a success regardless.
Chad W with a super chat, so I want to get him in. Does it not devalue the Rumble moving forward if Cody doesn't face Rumble? I mean, it does. It's there. I mean, the Rumble's still the Rumble, but it does. It sucks in the moment because you're like, well, why the? I mean, all those 30 people just fought for what?
There's another world title. I mean, that's Cody's. I mean, Seth is making a good case for it. At least he's, you know.
Had Seth not lost to Cody 3 times already, Seth's pitch would be great. But the fact that Cody has already accomplished it, it's.
But Seth said that. Yes, you beat me, but I need to beat you.
Yeah.
You know.
To the super chat, absolutely. It's important for people to watch shows to follow the rules, whether it's a Marvel show, whether it's a Netflix show, whether it's wrestling. And investment in Cody's story for 2 years and it being dished aside, he's got a lot of fans that are kids. They're confused. For fans, longtime fans like me, I at least know the winner of the Rumble is going to challenge for the belt he wants. And now it's like, not if The Rock comes. And that does take some of the light off the Rumble. The Rumble's still great, right? But it does lose fan investment in the on-air story, which, as we've said, is the most important thing.
Yeah. Yeah, Matt, you mentioned this press conference is going to be huge, widely watched, huge attended. It's free to get in. It's very possible to think, because Collision's running Henderson, Nevada, which is a suburb of Vegas, on Saturday. And I don't think it's a far-fetched prediction to say the press conference with no wrestling being advertised will probably outdraw what Collision does in audience on Saturday. And I don't know what that means, but I think that's going
to
happen.
I pitched Harwood today on invading the press conference. he didn't want to do that. He didn't think that was a good idea. So yeah, because poor Collision, you know, but hopefully they get some walk-ups, man. People bored the night before the Super Bowl. I bet Collision gets some walk-ups.
Hopefully.
I'm not a Vegas aficionado, Matt, but I haven't heard too much about being bored on Saturday night in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Just
that's a really, really good point, Justin.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. It's right. Amazing. I want to go there now.
All right, we'll end with me on top with that last point. Thanks to both of you. At Justin LaBar on the socials. Follow me wherever your social preference is. Here most Mondays. I was not here this past Monday. I apologize. But here most Mondays on Wrestling Inc. with Jimmy and Jack after Raw. And you can catch me every single Friday morning on Busted Open. It's Spar with LaBar with myself, Thunder Rosa, and Dave LaGreca, usually in the first hour. And then I have all 3 hours. I have control of the entire ship. On Sunday morning, myself and Jonathan Hood on the Busted Open Sunday edition. Big things happen in Busted Open. The podcast version, which is the 45-minute version of the show. Number one podcast in all of pro wrestling. Top 20 in all of sports this week, which is amazing considering the Super Bowl. Thank you. And then the radio show. The radio show is just recognized as number 24 in the country in terms of all sports talk radio shows that can be heard. Nationally. So a lot of good things about Busted Open. I encourage everybody to check it out if you have not done so yet. Thanks to everybody here tonight, whether you're watching live in the chat or watching live wherever you are, or if you choose just to listen to us, that's great too. No matter what, leave a nice comment, leave a 5-star review, be nice, put some positive in the world. We all certainly could use more positive than we could negative. Thanks to Matt. Thanks to Jimmy. Thanks to all of you. Enjoy your wrestling. Be good to each other, and we'll talk to you next time.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable.
Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save